welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. It is ACC Championship Week. All eyes on Charlotte, North Carolina, especially in the state of Virginia, as Virginia gets set to take on Duke in the ACC Championship game that everyone predicted. And I've got Andrea Adelson rejoining the podcast, senior writer at ESPN, co-host of Inside Access on ACC Network. You can also find that wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Andrea, I had you on early in the season, right before the NC State game, and I think everything else has just gone according to plan ever since then.
I did pick Virginia, I think, to win that game. Yeah. So I was feeling good about Virginia early on. I know they almost won. I know I was off a little bit on that, but it's been great to see Virginia kind of live up to the expectations they had for themselves going into this year. Folks outside the program are surprised. I don't think anyone inside the program is surprised that Virginia is here in this moment right now.
No, I just wrote a story that's going up on thesabre.com today just about, this is what they've been talking about ever since January. And they, kind of backed it up. It's Tommy Castellano said they were going to beat Alabama, and they did. And then we don't have to talk about the rest of the season. And then Chandler Morris said they're going to go win an ACC championship. Now they have a opportunity to do just that in Charlotte. But Andrew, let's start here. Just bigger picture. One word to describe the ACC this season.
Chaos, right? I mean, isn't that the word that everybody wants to use to describe the ACC? We had it with the Coastal Division, and now we just have it with the entire conference, especially when you look at who's in the ACC championship game, right? Two Coastal teams. And you look at the teams that were vying in that tiebreaker to make it into the ACC championship game. Coastal teams, right? So it feels like coastal chaos has enveloped the entire conference, particularly when we all thought in November it was going to be one way, right? Miami was the favorite probably to win the ACC. And then Georgia Tech became the favorite to win the ACC. And then SMU became the favorite to win the ACC. And there's Virginia, which was in first place the entire time. Like, okay, right, everyone, like, don't talk about us. And now Virginia, obviously the favorite to win the ACC. Every week has been more unpredictable than the next, and I think this is why it's the perfect ACC championship game for the most unpredictable season in the ACC, the most unpredictable ACC championship game.
Yeah, I keep saying it's gone from coastal chaos to coast-to-coast chaos in the ACC. Yes. Because it now envelops the entire country. You can't escape it. The ACC will find a way to just have some crazy results. And I think no more so than SMU just needing to beat a Cal team that had just fired their head coach. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, they're already bowl eligible, so they didn't really have anything to play for except, they go out there and beat SMU in a game that SMU had to have. It seems like any time a team has to have a game, maybe barring the Virginia Tech game, like just didn't go the result the way that they wanted.
Well, Georgia Tech and Pitt, right? Georgia Tech wins, they're in. They just get embarrassed at home by Pitt, who then gets embarrassed the next week at home by Miami. And Pitt had an outside chance as well if they win that game to try and make it into the ACC. But I'm glad you said that the chaos is from coast to coast, because this championship game was determined on the West Coast, because Cal upset SMU, two teams that were not even in the ACC 3 years ago. Now everyone's well acquainted with chaos in this conference, and it's such a disappointing end, quite frankly, for SMU, because you're right. It felt like the arrow was pointed toward them, the way they were playing in the second half of the season. But Cal, after losing to their rival and having their head coach fired, found a way to win that game. And I don't know if anybody watched the end of it, but the fans storming the field and enveloping JKS as he's trying to do an interview with Lauren Sisler. I'm glad they got out of there. But just another wild Saturday in the ACC. And the one thing that nobody maybe expected at the beginning of the year, Virginia beating their rival, Virginia Tech, to seal a spot in the ACC championship game. So we'll see if the magical season can continue for Virginia in the championship game.
Yeah, before we kind of get more into Virginia's season, Manny Diaz talked on the pre-ACC championship game teleconference. And obviously the big question for him is, everyone's talking about this Duke doomsday scenario for the ACC, where if Duke wins, there's a potential that the ACC gets completely shut out of the college football playoff, which, needed, without being needed to say, like that would be a, doomsday scenario for the ACC. How do you just view the tiebreaker situation now with, these bloated conferences? It's not just the ACC. I mean, you look at the Mountain West, they had to go to this mathematic formulation that, not everyone fully understood to get their conference champion pairing. And it's just kind of a fact of what the conferences are now.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And the fact that we're in this moment relying on a fifth tiebreaker, which is conference opponent win percentage, which quite frankly, teams don't have control over, right? I mean, the schedule is the schedule before the season, and then you play it and you have no idea how your opponents are going to fare. If Florida State won a few more games, maybe Miami is in this game as opposed to Duke, but Duke gets the benefit of playing Georgia Tech and Virginia in the regular season, two of the best teams in the conference that ended up winning, nine plus games, right? That was a huge advantage for Duke. Miami did not play those teams in the regular season. Not Miami's fault, not Duke's fault, right? This is just the way the schedule was laid out for them. So, in my view, I think the easiest fix here, and it's something that the American already had in place to determine their conference championship, was a CFP ranking. That is the easiest fix here because I think a lot of people right now are scratching their heads at the fact that Miami is the highest ranked ACC team. There are people who view Miami as the best team. That's up for debate, and I'm sure Virginia would like to debate that. But the fact is, Miami is sitting here at number 12, has the potential, maybe we'll see what the committee does on Tuesday with the ranking, to be an at-large, and the conference champion maybe doesn't get in if it's Duke. What world is that? Or the ACC gets shut out completely. So to me, the easiest scenario here is, all right, if there's no head-to-head involved, and which should be, that should be the number one tiebreaker, head-to-head. I always believe that, right? Miami and Duke did not play, so that gets thrown out the window. The next one should be highest ranked CFP team. I don't think there's people within the conference who would argue about that because you want to have your best teams playing at the end of the year. Miami does have a better record than Duke. Miami is ranked higher than Duke. Therefore, if they use the CFP ranking, this championship game would look different. And I anticipate that to be something the ACC takes a look at in the offseason. Because how can you not? How can you not after the way this year played out?
I think every year you learn a little bit more about what happened the previous season and you kind of read and react to that. I don't think anyone would complain if it was Virginia and Miami in the ACC championship game right now. That's just not how the tiebreakers broke out. And it almost is like, the rising tide lifts all boats. Virginia's record lifted one of their, opponent that they played 2 weeks ago into the ACC championship game with the, opposing, win percentage that you talked about there. If that doomsday scenario came to fruition, I mean, just what do you think that would mean for the ACC?
I don't know because I honestly don't know how the committee is going to view this. And it's not like we can look at past committee decisions and say, well, this is what they're going to do because the committee is different every single year. And it feels like each committee values something a little bit different, right? Now, 2 years ago, people could look at that and leaving out Florida State as an undefeated ACC champion and say, well, they're definitely going to leave out the ACC. They did it before, they'll do it again. I don't know because the conversation would likely shift toward James Madison if they win the Sun Belt versus an 8-5 Duke team that wins the ACC. I think we can all agree the American would definitely be in. They've already got a team that's ranked in the top 25 in Tulane. We'll see if they can win the conference championship. They're playing North Texas, which is 11-1, right? So you have to feel good that the American's going to get in. So now it comes down to a conversation with JMU and Duke. JMU is ranked higher in our S plus P, which is what Bill Connolly does, and in the FPI. But the strength of schedule to me is probably what is going to be a determining factor here. James Madison's like 118 right now, and it's not going to get any better playing in a conference championship game. They are the weakest of all the conferences when you're trying to rank out what strength of schedule looks like. Duke did play a challenging non-conference schedule, which is why they're sitting there with a 7-5 record. Now you could say they should have beaten UConn. They should have beaten UConn. I watched that game. They should have won that game. Right? UConn's 9-3 though, right? Tulane's playing for a conference championship. That they lost to Tulane on the road. Both those games, by the way, on the road. And then they lost to Illinois in a game where they had five turnovers and kind of blew it themselves, right? So if you take out the non-conference play and you just look at what they did in the ACC, they had the same record as Miami in ACC play, playing obviously a more difficult and challenging ACC schedule. And Manny Diaz said this on the call. That you mentioned to preview the ACC championship game. If they're just going to penalize them for playing a more challenging non-conference schedule, then why even play a non-conference? That's the argument that Steve Sarkisian is making with Texas right now. The fact that they went on the road and played Ohio State, they're going to get penalized for that because they're 9-3. Well, they're probably going to get penalized for losing to Florida. That's a different conversation. Duke doesn't have a loss like that on their resume right now. All their losses have been to good teams, right? So, the fact is, I don't know how the committee is going to view that. I don't know how much they're going to view the 1-3 non-conference record or going to take into account that they did play in their conference championship game in one of the Power Four conferences and won it and beat a Virginia team that is ranked in the top 25, which would give them more top 25 wins than James Madison, right?
Yeah.
So it all depends on how the committee is going to view it. And I'm not comfortable to say the ACC is absolutely going to get left out because I don't think anybody knows, quite frankly, what the committee is going to do. I would love to know where they would rank JMU and Duke right now going into the conference championship game. They only put out their top 25, so we're not going to know the answer to that. But I know I'm being long-winded here. The easy answer is nobody knows, and nobody will know unless the scenario unfolds and the committee has to decide on Sunday.
That's what I keep saying is we don't know what they think of JMU. They have not put them in the rankings yet,
Right,
so they've been
right.
very hesitant to do so, even though AP Top 25 has put them in there for a couple of weeks now, and they've continued to win against an easier schedule. The win against Virginia would be much far better than anything that JMU has on their resume. So that would be the one thing that Duke has to hold over JMU. Let's talk about a little, brighter note. UVA enjoying their best season in a long time. Second 10-win season in program history, searching for their first outright ACC championship in program history. The last, tied in the 1995 season, back in the 90s, 1989 as well. But overall impressions of just what this Virginia team has done. I know you just wrote an article that I want to talk about too in a little bit, but just overall impressions first on this Virginia season.
Well, how can you describe it as anything other than storybook? And it's not like Virginia came out of nowhere, which I think a lot of people nationally think, wow, Virginia. The fact is, they've been building toward this moment. You know that. The listeners know that. There was a plan in place to get Virginia to be competitive and try and win championships in the ACC. And in all of my conversations with Tony Elliott going back to January, there was a lot of confidence and belief that this was a team that would be better, that would compete, that would give itself a chance because they had the money to go into the portal. They felt good about the players that they were able to bring into the portal, starting with Chandler Morris, who in that first team meeting said, "I didn't come here to just be bowl eligible. I came here to win a championship." And all the players around him, when he stood up and said that in the team meeting, were like, "Well, yeah, like what else are we doing here? Why, what's the point if we're not trying to win a championship?" So you had this, in my view, terrific mix of foundational players, of guys who'd been through some really hard, unimaginable moments at Virginia in 2022, year one for Tony, going through the tragedy of losing three players. You had this foundation of guys who stayed and dedicated themselves to getting Virginia to a better place with the addition of guys through recruiting, with the addition of this portal class, which was the best one Virginia had ever signed, senior players who came here for one reason, and that was to help lift an entire program. And so when you've got that mix of guys who have this one vision and are playing for one goal, one purpose, and maybe put some of their own selfish goals aside to get Virginia to a place where they can compete, then you have this situation where you have a team, a true team, a collection of individuals that are all playing together. And I think we've seen that from the first game of the year for Virginia up until the end of the season. So as we said earlier, the folks in the building aren't surprised. Maybe people outside are a little bit surprised. I'm not that surprised. I mean, I remember asking Tony in April. I think we talked about this on the podcast back in August. Well, why can't you be the Indiana of this season? And he's like, yeah, I think we could be, right? He didn't kind of be like, well, don't say that out loud. They wanted to embrace those expectations. And I think for Tony, you know, part of this too is having come from Clemson. One of the things he said to me in that article that we'll talk about that really struck me was he was trying to get people to meet him at his level when he got to Virginia, and then quickly realized I have to get them to a level where they can meet me at a championship level, that they needed to meant to win there. And so when he went into that game against Florida State and walked onto that field and saw the environment, he truly felt like he was at home because this was a big national spotlight game that was going to say a lot about where his team was. And if they could win that game, they would be on that trajectory that he felt every single week at Clemson, where every game was a big win, national spotlight game, top 25 game, it all mattered. And so he had been building the program to get to that moment. And I think that Florida State game just kind of underscored that belief that, yeah, we can do this, guys. We know what it takes. And from there, it just kind of built upon itself, overcame some adversity against Wake Forest, but then came back and was able to show what this program is made of. So I just think it's been an incredible testament to what belief means from the top of your program to the very last person in your program, however you want to describe that. And what we love about college football, we love stories like this when you have teams that are so easy to root for. And I think that's what Virginia has been this year.
Yeah, you after doing this for a while, you start to understand coach speak and players kind of mirror that at times. The championship talk has never been just, oh yeah, we want to compete for a championship because that's what you're supposed to say. It's the there was an internal belief. I mean, if you walk into the Hardy Football Operations Center, which is an incredible facility now, they got placards up for their schedule and they have had the ACC championship on there. They've had the college football playoff on there since they put it up in, back in the spring. Like they have been one track mind that they were trying to get to this point, and the players kind of continue to echo that. So they've been saying this for a while. It's just people weren't really paying attention to it because they're like, it's just Virginia, that's cute, like whatever. We'll put them 14th in the preseason ACC media poll that I know a lot of players like to reference. There were some anonymous coaches out there that had some choice language about the Cavaliers this offseason. But there was an internal belief that they never kind of got wavered by that. They always kind of thought that this was possible. You did have an opportunity to talk to Tony Elliott, Carla Williams, and some of the players a couple weeks ago for your article on ESPN, which just the beginning of it, why not Virginia? And that's kind of been the whole thing is like, why not? Why couldn't it be? What were just some of the key things that you took away from those conversations?
There was so much, quite honestly, that when I sat down to write it, I was like, how do I put this story together? Because you can't talk about the story of the season without talking about what happened in 2020. I give a lot of credit to Tony for continuing to keep those players at the forefront of his mind with everything that he's trying to do, with everything this team is trying to accomplish. They win on Saturday. The first thing he does in post game is mention the families of Lavelle Davis and Devin Chandler and Deshaun Perry, because last week was an extremely difficult week for the folks at Virginia and those families. And I know Tony was in court for the sentencing hearing of the man who shot and killed those three Virginia players. I don't think people outside the program have a true understanding of the difficulty of the last 3 years, quite honestly. And I don't think people outside the program had an understanding of that difficulty of having to go through that last week on an open date before you're playing your biggest rival with a chance to play in the ACC championship game. So you can't really tell the story of this team without referencing what happened in 2022. And so One of the biggest takeaways for me was Tony publicly saying for the first time he thought about just retiring from coaching after that happened, because the weight of it was so difficult and challenging, and he didn't know how he would be able to continue on as a head coach when you, as a coach, your job is to bring 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds, whatever the age is, right, into your program and help them grow into young men. And again, you talk about coach speak, and a lot of coaches say that. Tony lives this. This is Tony's life. Tony wholeheartedly believes in what it means to be a servant leader as the head coach. This is not just coach speak from Tony. And so when he loses players, it is an unbearable weight, because he has already envisioned what their lives are going to be like beyond the football field, how they're going to be as husbands, as fathers, as leaders in their community. And that's all taken away for a senseless act of violence that nobody really has an answer to. We will never have an answer about why that happened. And so accepting that obviously has been difficult and challenging. And the fact that Tony kind of questioned why he was doing this and how he was going to continue on, I think, was one of the more eye-opening parts of the conversation. The fact that he was able to just kind of recenter himself and say, yeah, I am a coach and this is my calling and this is hard and I don't know how we're going to get through it, but it's also my job to get the rest of these players that are I've been entrusted to lead to get them through it. And so the fact that he stayed committed through very challenging moments, the fact that Carla stayed committed to Tony when there were a lot of people who wondered what's happening with this program, she understood the difficulty and in trying to show up for work every day when you've lost three players, teammates, brothers, and people that you're supposed to coach and lead. So she understood. I think, again, people outside the program didn't. So in those conversations with Tony and Carla, it was very clear that there was a lot going on within the program, and it was going to take some time for them to build that foundation that Tony, set out to build when he got to Virginia. So you get through all of that, and then you reach a point where you're like, okay, what are we going to do here to compete? Right? I haven't been able to have any money, haven't been able to go in the portal. If we're going to do that, then we're just going to be an average football team, and we're not going to be able to take that next step as a program. And so the commitment that Carla and Tony made to get those donations, to talk to boosters, to get them to understand this is the reality. This is where Virginia is, and this is where everyone else is. If you want us to be where everyone else is, this is what it's going to take. So that buy-in that they were able to get from donors to say, you know what? All right, yeah, I believe you, and I believe in you, and I believe that you've got a plan in place to get this turned around. If we're able to donate some money, they're able to get those large $1 million donations from some of the donors, go in the portal and remake the roster to be able to get it to a point to compete for championships. So that was the second part of it, right? You've got this tragedy you've got to overcome, keeping those players front of mind while also understanding the reality of where college football is right now, the commitment that Carla made and that Tony made. We're not just going to have this be a middling program. We want to win here. We've won in all our other sports. We can win in football. And it's not just a flash in the pan. We're only doing this for 1 year, right? Virginia's already got donations so that they can continue forward with what they've already started to build, because nobody just wants this to be 1 year and let's go back to being 6-6 and 5-7, right? You've got to have that financial commitment now with rev share and then adding whatever you can with NIL to get yourselves in a spot to be competitive. So those were the two biggest takeaways for me. But the fact that Virginia's like, we're not going anywhere. We've made this financial commitment and this is what we want to do year after year. The fact that Tony's now in a spot where, yeah, well, this is what it's supposed to look like, guys. This is what it was like at Clemson every year, I think gives Virginia an advantage as well moving forward.
Yeah, I think, everyone's trying to focus on the season at hand, but you're also like, is this a flash in the pan? Like, so many seasons, in the past in college football, there's so many one-hit wonders. But what makes you kind of think from those conversations that maybe this could be a little bit more sustainable, kind of going forward?
I think there's a couple of things. I think one, the fact that Virginia already's got financial commitment for this next class, portal class, whatever Tony plans to do for the roster, I think is incredibly important because you don't want to just win 10 games and then what's the plan? So the fact that there already is a plan in place in terms of getting people to donate more, to be financially committed. And I also think this season was important to be able to show it, right? It's one thing to say, hey, if you make a financial commitment to us, we'll get some wins. You don't know, right? You've got to have that blind belief. And that's something that Carla said in our conversation, right? They had to have people believe before the actual results were there. Well, now the results are here, right? So you can go back to more donors and maybe people who are on the fence. And I'm not sure. I don't know if I want to do this and say, all right, look at what X number of dollars got us now, right? We're competing and playing for a championship. If we had this many dollars, now think about the possibilities of where we can get moving forward, because it's not just about this year. It's about making sure you're laying a foundation to continue to have this type of success year after year. So I think the fact that Virginia's already there and's already got financial commitments is important. I think the fact that Tony and Carla are committed to doing this year after year is important. I think the fact that Virginia did a great job with the transfer portal in the types of players they were able to bring into the program and fit in with the culture they've already created was important. I mean, think about how hard it is when you go in the portal, and we can use Florida State as an example, which has been a very portal-heavy program. When you hit, man, it's great. When you miss, it's not so great. And Florida State has missed the last 2 years, particularly at the quarterback position, right? And I know this is Chandler's last year, but they also feel really good about where Daniel Kalen is. Maybe they go in the portal and bring in another veteran guy, but the fact that they've got a plan in place, they've had the consistency with their assistant coaching staff, which nobody wants to talk about, but I think has been hugely important for this team as well, because you've got guys who have an understanding of what's expected, what's required. The portal guys come in and it's like, all right, guys, this is what we're doing. This is how we do things. And nobody can deviate because this is kind of the way that we're doing things. It's also been hugely important for Virginia. And so it goes back to, they've also got an infrastructure with the who they have with their front office personnel, evaluation type people. I think that's been hugely important for Tony. Some of the restructuring that they did in the offseason to bring in some guys who could help with that. They've hit on every single player they brought in from the portal. I don't think we can sit here and be like, well, that's a huge miss. And the ones that they maybe missed on got hurt, right? So
Yeah.
it's not their fault, right? Maybe some of the guys in the offensive line you thought would be contributors. So I think that's a great sign for moving forward, right? Like, okay, we had a good formula this year with guys we sought out in the portal. Now we kind of know what we need to do to be able to not rebuild, but just reload headed into next year. There's going to be some questions, obviously, but I think Tony's got a really great plan in place and can sell what this, if he sold 5-7, right, to people, please help. We just need your help. Imagine how much easier it's going to be to sell 10-2 or 11-2 with an ACC championship.
Yeah, winning begets winning. I had Wes Durham on a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about this same topic, and it was, the guys they hit on in the transfer portal, guys like Jamari Taylor, running back coming from North Carolina Central, Daniel Rickert, coming from East Tennessee Tech, and they got some guys, from upper levels, but it just seems like they knew where to find like the right type of guys for what they wanted to do.
And that's hugely important. And I don't think when we watch Virginia, you can be like, oh, well, that's really not a Virginia guy. It feels like everybody is a Virginia guy because of the style of play, how they carry themselves, just the character of everybody on the team. I mean, Mitchell Melton, right, has been outstanding. Fisher K-Mac, Jason Pravard. Like, we can sit here and go down the list. The receivers that they've been able to bring in and have just the depth at the receiver position, maybe that was lacking from a couple of years ago when you do have some injuries there, yet you can still have guys step up and make some big plays. And the fact that, Jamari Taylor to me is one of the most underrated stories in the entire country. I mean, he had to walk on at NC Central, right? It's not like he was even a recruited player. So you're talking about somebody walking on to an HBCU. Like, think about how underlooked or overlooked he was in high school to get from that moment to bet on yourself and now come into a Virginia program and end up leading the ACC in rushing, the first Virginia player to do that in 25 years. Honestly, everyone likes to look at Chandler, and he has been outstanding for this team. The play of the offensive line has been outstanding. But without Jamari Taylor and the balance that they have with that run game, which was a huge problem for Virginia the first 3 years, not being able to run that ball consistently. Without Jamari Taylor, because of the injuries they've had at running back, this team is not playing for an ACC championship. I
No.
think it's probably easy to say that. He has been the one through line throughout the course of the season that has given Virginia a chance to be where they are right now.
Yeah, he's been a culture-changing type player. And I go back to this stat. They had 14 rushing touchdowns as a team last year. Jamari Taylor had 14 on his own this year. Like, that's all you need to know. Before we get out of here, let's talk about this actual matchup between UVA and Duke. Obviously, just 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago now, I guess, they played in Durham, Virginia, probably one of their best performances of the season, winning 34-17. It was 31-3 going into the fourth quarter. Duke gets a couple late touchdowns there. Virginia kind of let the foot off the gas a little bit. Held this explosive Duke offense to a season low in yards, and just about, the least amount of yards that they've had on the ground as well. Just where do you make of this matchup, round two coming up?
Look, I thought going into that game, Duke had an advantage because of their offense, quite frankly. And I thought they would probably just win because they'd outscore Virginia. Because at that time, going into that game, Virginia was kind of up and down
Yeah.
offensively. Chandler was coming off of an injury. It was just kind of like, what are we going to get from this team, right? Are we going to get the best of Virginia? Are we going to get the Virginia team that we saw against Wake, against Washington State, right? Like, think about some of the performances where you're like, I don't know. The fact that Virginia was able to come out there and be as dominant as they were on offense and defense and special teams and play its most complete game of the season, knowing what was on the line in that game, I thought made it their best game of the year. And I probably give that one a slight edge over Virginia Tech, although that was a very complete performance as well. It's hard to ask a team to do that now twice over the span of what, 4 weeks, to be as dominant as they were against a really talented Duke team. And again, I know people are going to look at the 7-5 record. This is, I think, the most unpredictable team in the ACC because they look like a top 25 team 1 week, and then they look horrible the next week. And a lot of it is because they can't get out of their own way. And we saw some of that against Virginia, right? They couldn't do anything much on third down. They couldn't run the ball, and they didn't get any pressure on Chandler Morris, and they didn't really affect much in the way of difference-making plays. That Duke defense thrives when they can be aggressive and they can force teams into mistakes. And I know Virginia had, I think, a couple of turnovers in that game, but it really didn't matter in the grand scheme of things because of the way they started out that game. So, in my view, I think what Duke has to do to be able to get themselves a chance to win this game is establish the run from the very beginning. It's something they simply were not able to do against Virginia the first time around. They were able to run the ball a lot better the last 2 weeks against Duke and Wake Forest. The only way that they win is if they have balance. They can't just rely on having Mensa make some big plays for them. So they have to find a way to establish that run. I'm sure Virginia knows that, and that's why it's going to be a priority for them to stop the run. I will say, I think Virginia has been outstanding the last month of the season in the run game, slowing down the opponent's run. I mean, look at what they did against Virginia Tech last week. And that was a Virginia Tech team, by the way, that ran on Miami, that had opportunities to try and win that game and did get some big runs on the Canes. That did not happen last week. So the fact that I think Virginia is playing really well defensively right now, particularly up front, is a big advantage. They're going to have to be able to do that again. Duke defensively has been just incredibly hurt by injuries across that board, basically at every level of their defense. I wouldn't say they're playing at an all-ACC type level right now because they've lost all-ACC caliber players from that defense, particularly at linebacker in the secondary. So, in my opinion, Duke has to try and affect Chandler Morris and get after the quarterback and get a little bit better with the pass rush than they were in the first game. If they can do that, slow down Jamari Taylor a little bit more than they did in the first game, maybe get some game-changing plays on third down, create some turnovers that are advantageous to them, maybe score off of some of those turnovers, then I think Duke's putting themselves in position to win. Whether Duke can do that defensively, given some of the injuries that they've had, it is a question, but I do think Duke's defensive line is the best part of that defense. If that defensive line can play better than they did the first time around, I think Duke gives themselves a chance to win.
Yeah, that was one of the big questions going into it last time. They have a couple of really good players on the defensive line, and Virginia will probably be coming into this a little hobbled on the offensive line. We saw Mikhail Boley go down in the last game, and he was on crutches. So it'll be interesting to see just kind of how that matchup develops. But this is, everyone likes to see new matchups and new teams play each other. But this is where I think coaching really comes out, is when you have a repeat matchup. What adjustments do you make? And we talked about Virginia. That was one of their best performances of the season. So what adjustments do you make off of that when you already were up 31-3 going into the fourth quarter and you kind of had that game in hand? For Duke, the adjustments you got to make because you were down 31-3 going into the fourth quarter. You know what you got to do to get better. That's why I think this is going to be a really intriguing kind of chess match between Manny Diaz and Tony Elliott.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And if you're Virginia, you know that Duke is going to try something a little bit different to be able to get the advantages they feel like they have, right? So you have to anticipate we're going to see something different from Duke going into this, because if they play the same way, they're not going to give themselves a chance to win. So I think that's part of it too. If you're Virginia, you don't want to stray away from what you have done the last few weeks, because Virginia is playing its best ball of the season right now, which is where you want to be, what you want to do. And I know that's something Tony has emphasized to this team, having been through it before at Clemson, right? You want to remember November. That's like something that coaches always like to say. But obviously, I think what they did in the open date to get themselves to a point where they could win that game, but also continue to be Virginia and not deviate from what has made them so good, is going to be important. But taking care of the ball, right? Making sure you're not giving Duke opportunities, right? Because that's what I think they did so well in that first game, is they didn't really give Duke any opportunities to take control of the game, to make game-changing plays. Nothing. They were suffocating in that game for what, 55 of the 60 minutes. There was that one lull when Tony yelled at them and said, "Guys, what are we doing here? We can't take our foot off the gas, right? Like, we can't just be like, oh, hey, we're up big, great." No, like, that's a reminder for this team. So I think it's going to be important for Virginia to just, we're not going to do anything different. We're going to be Virginia, but we're also going to make sure, like we've done the last 3 weeks, we're not going to have any catastrophic plays. We're not going to turn the ball over and give them chances to get easy scores off of our turnovers, right? We're going to be good on special teams, right? We're going to be solid there. And we're going to try and dominate on the offensive and defensive lines, which is this team has, I think, done incredibly well the last 3 weeks.
All right, prediction time. Can Virginia come up with another win over Duke, and for the second time in 3 or 4 weeks here? I think it's a 2.5 point spread, so it's a tight one going into this game. What would you predict in Charlotte on Saturday?
I'm sure it's a tight one because it's really hard to beat a team twice in 1 year, let alone twice over the span of what, 3 or 4 weeks. But I'm going to go with Virginia because it feels like this is a team of destiny this year. I love the way they're playing right now. They are playing with confidence. They're playing with physicality. They're playing like they're the ones that are going to dictate terms of the game. That maybe that's not how they played in the first half of the season. They're trying to figure things out a little bit, but I think they've got things figured out here now that they've hit November, and particularly after the weight game. And Chandler got hurt, and it's kind of hard to be like, well, if he had been healthy, what would have happened? But I think there were some learning lessons off of that game that have really helped this team over the last few weeks, quite frankly. I think that open date also came at a really good time as well. I know there's some injuries on the offensive line, but I just love the way this team is playing right now. So I'm going to stick with Virginia.
Yeah, I'll go Virginia as well. Probably like 30-21. I'll just throw something in the dark there. Yeah, Virginia, just they haven't scored that well in, the
Right.
second half of the season, obviously. But I think with this Duke defense, we saw some opportunities there in the first game. They did bottle up Jamari Taylor pretty well for the majority of that game before he had his, big, long touchdown run there in the fourth quarter. And I think Manny Diaz made reference to that. But it'll be an interesting one, Andrea. It'll be a good time just to kind of get down to Charlotte and see Virginia on the stage. I haven't been there since 2019. And, back in 2019, there's a lot of different feelings going to that game when you're
Yes.
playing the juggernaut that Clemson was at
Yep.
the time. So I'm sure Virginia fans will enjoy this trip a little bit more. There's also a basketball game at noon earlier in the day for Virginia fans to go to. They're hosting or they're playing Dayton down there. So it's going to just be a big old Virginia takeover in Charlotte.
Well, I hope to see a great crowd in Charlotte and looking forward to seeing you there as well.
Yeah, looking forward to it. All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. Like, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on YouTube. Follow, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. It's been a big week for the podcast. Hope you enjoy it. We will see you down in Charlotte.